Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague Peter Flaherty, and we are here to talk about the basketball tournament, which, of course, this week. Peter, what if we just did an hour on the NCAA basketball tournament?
I was going to say, if we let our intrusive thoughts win and did that, would people like really complain?
Probably
not, but...
Maybe. We would get one complaint, I bet. I bet yeah, somebody would. Somebody would say that's not okay.
We get a 1-star review on Apple Podcasts that like sporadically pop up.
Yes, please don't be one of those people. 5-star reviews or just don't review. There's an easy option there. Just don't review. but if you are reviewing, we love them. And make sure you're subscribed, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We come at you once a week to talk about college baseball, even in this time of March Madness. Don't sue me, the NCAA. And we have our own version of March craziness here as we move into week 6 of the college baseball season. Last week, the start of SEC play that provided us a fair number of intriguing results around the country. And pretty much, I can't even say that. I was going to say pretty much everyone's into conference play. And I think that's mostly true starting this weekend, but there are some stragglers out there, but we're getting into the meat of the schedule, the part of the schedule where teams are forced to play teams that are similar to them. And that always provides a lot of entertainment, a lot of close games, a lot of things for us to sit here and talk about on the podcast. And that's what we're going to do this week. There was no change at the top of the Baseball America Top 25 last week, but 4 new teams did enter. So if you want to check that out over at baseballamerica.com, the poll looks a little bit different. But Peter, I guess the place to start this podcast is in the SEC, which of course started conference play last week and provided us with a few top 25 matchups, notably Florida and Texas A&M. And that one went to Florida. We've spent a lot of time talking about Florida on this podcast already. They continue to demand attention, though, by being one of the stranger teams out there. As we record this on Wednesday, they celebrated winning that series against Texas A&M, previously undefeated Texas A&M, I should say, by going out and losing at home to Jacksonville. Florida now, Peter, they have not won or lost consecutive games since March 1st. They just alternate wins and losses. And this weekend, they looked pretty good. And I was ready to say, maybe they've found something. Brandon Neely looked really good over the course of 5 innings throughout the weekend. That's their all-SEC closer. They took down a previously undefeated team. They made a pitching staff that we thought was pretty good at A&M look very mortal. They just drove balls all weekend and they got a really significant series win. And then on Tuesday, all of the problems like reared their head again. And I'm just kind of forced to reckon with this fact, Peter, that Florida is a very flawed team at this point in the season, and they're good enough to beat anyone, particularly at home, but they're also not above losing some very strange games.
It's such an odd team, and I know that like it's such a hot button topic with ranking them. And on the one hand, its lone midweek win is over Bethune-Cookman, which came back in February, I believe. But on the other hand,
they actually have 2. They beat North Florida somewhere along the way.
Okay. They did sweep the Ospreys. I forgot. But other than that, like they've won every weekend series. Its most impressive one was obviously this past weekend, and I think for me, when watching them play, that lineup is super, super dangerous. Like, I have no doubt it's going to be able to keep Florida in most, if not all, of their games, with the exception of a handful. Like, that top 4 that they trot out of Cade Kurland, Jack Caglione, Luke Heyman, Colby Shelton, even, like, throwing in guys like Ty Evans and Tyler Shelnut, who, without their contributions, I think that we would probably be looking at a drastically different Florida team. Like, I know that Cags and Cade Kurland and Colby Shelton get a ton of love, and rightfully so. But Tyler Shelnut and Ty Evans have come through with huge, huge hits. But going back to this weekend, like Brandon Neely, his resurgence this past week, I think he threw 6 shutout. That to me felt inevitable. He is way too good of an arm, and he has a track record of showing how good of an arm he is. for the turnaround and not come, to however much extent that is to be seen. But I think he's just about back to form, which is huge. But other than that, it's pretty slim pickings. I think a point we brought up last week was the freshmen are pitching like freshmen, which normally is okay, and you kind of allow for this period of growth. But when you're relying on a handful of them to give you meaningful innings in these huge series, I think that's where it creates issues. And I just like to kind of beat the same drum a little bit. Someone around Brandon Neely is going to have to step up, because you can't throw him for three innings on Friday and then two on Sunday every weekend. So some of these arms around him have to step up. I think that the rotation of Fisher, Peterson, and Caglione is very, very good, but to a similar extent, maybe less so than Wake, just given how good their rotation is. Like, where are those other innings and outs going to come from on a weekend that will allow you to win these marquee series? Like, they have another one coming up this weekend at LSU. Then they have another highly, highly anticipated game for a lot of reasons against Florida State. And then another great series against Mississippi State next weekend. But I just am concerned about the bullpen depth other than Brandon Neely and a couple of the other arms.
So last week we came on here and I mentioned that I was a little concerned about Duke, and they keep taking these like really bad losses, and what is that going to mean for the NCAA tournament case? And, you know, this is Florida's another tough one for Florida. Jacksonville is 8-12. It's kind of hard to forecast where their RPI is going to fall right now. Like, the, you know, like, weird things happen when you're with teams in the A-Sun. And, you know, last year Jacksonville was a pretty good team that won 34 games and they had an RPI of 127. So, you know, because of that, they could get a lot better over the course. Like, it's not quite the same as Duke losing to Akron and to Ryder, two teams that I'm very confident finish outside the top 100. But the point here is that Florida now has home losses to Jacksonville and St. Mary's. They went on the road and lost to Stetson as well. None of those losses is great. None of those losses is terrible, but all of them might be bad losses when you look at them RPI wise come May. I mean, we'll have to see. I don't have quite, like, none of them seem to be as bad as Akron or Ryder potentially, but Florida's not helping itself. They also just keep taking on losses, and at some point that's really going to catch up to them. And, you know, we can sit here in March and debate where they should be in the top 25, and that's a fun little debate to have, but, you know, hey, it's March. Like, things will work themselves out from that standpoint. But if you're the committee and you're looking at records at the end, like, that really could, these losses really could affect them. And I always say, like, you can take one of these. It doesn't matter if you have one of these. It really doesn't even matter if you have two of these. But when you start taking multiples, that's when you really start running into issues. So that's something to look at for Florida. I mean, they've got a lot, or to keep it in the back of your mind for Florida, they've got a lot bigger problems, I would say, right now, just given that they're a 500 team in March and are staring at, you know, that slate that Peter mentioned there, LSU, Florida State, Mississippi State over the next 2 weeks. Like, it's not going to get any easier. And, you know, going on the road to Baton Rouge this weekend is going to be really tough. We've spent a lot of time on Florida, though, over the like, this is the team that we've kept talking about. So, Peter, what I want to talk about a little bit more is A&M. A&M came into this weekend undefeated. They were like number two in the country in ERA or something like that. And Florida, I don't, like, do you feel like Florida exposed them this weekend? Do you feel like it was, you know, just something that was going to happen? Like, going on the road in the SEC is hard. They played some close games. They lost by a couple runs on Friday. They lost by a couple runs on Sunday. You know, the series could have gone very differently for A&M. Are you concerned in any way about what you saw from A&M this weekend in their toughest test to date?
No, not really. I think I would have liked for that. Like, in terms of an optics standpoint, like for them to come away with a series win, but by no means did Florida dominate them. It was a really competitive series. I think that, you know, Ryan Prager and the other members of the rotation weren't going to be able to keep up the video game like stats that they were. I didn't foresee him not getting through the third inning, but no, it doesn't really affect my opinion on A&M all that much. I think that they're a really, really good team, even a great team with an Omaha type ceiling. The lineup is super deep. Again, the pitching staff is really solid. I think that they have found the perfect home for Chris Cortez coming out of the bullpen. He looked fantastic in Friday night's game. He struck out 8 across 4 innings, got burned a little bit with one swing, but other than that, it was a couple of bad innings that did him in the end. And Sunday's game was really well played. And Florida, they used that, the Tyler Shelnut, again, kind of the unsung hero of the team so far, that 2-run home run to propel him to victory. So it was by no means a thrashing by Florida. Even from an optics standpoint, for A&M, like, I don't think that this is too bad of a series loss. Like it's a road top 10 conference series loss to what I still believe to be a good team. I don't really know how good at this point. I guess we'll find out pretty soon, but my opinion remains largely unchanged by A&M. I don't think that they were necessarily like the top 5 team that they were coming into the weekend.
Yeah, I don't think that there are sweeping conclusions to be drawn from this weekend. It was a tough weekend for their pitching staff, and I think maybe that they didn't get exposed. That's way too strong of a statement, but I do think that some of what you had seen from their pitching staff was, if not inflated by a bad schedule, just like luck driven in some respects, that it wasn't, they had to have experienced some regression. Like Ryan Prager hadn't allowed a run before this weekend. Florida hit a bunch of home runs, which they're capable of doing, particularly in that ballpark. Like, again, not something to be terribly concerned about, but it is something maybe to monitor that, you know, this was a pitching staff that had allowed 6 home runs in their first 17 games and then gave up 8 to Florida in 3 games. I think that speaks a lot to Florida's lineup, but I do think that the truth about this pitching staff lies somewhere between what you saw this weekend and what you saw for the first 17 games. Like, they will settle in somewhere in between there, and that'll probably be plenty good enough. A&M's a good team with a good pitching staff, but what you saw early might not be quite as reflective as, okay, let's move on. A lot to cover within the SEC itself. And, Peter, let's go to the Magnolia State, where Ole Miss won a series against South Carolina. They won the first 2 games and then lost on Sunday, and Mississippi State won a series against LSU. They split their first 2 games, and then Mississippi State really took it to LSU on Sunday, in a 15-5 win. I guess the question to be asked here, Peter, is, are the Rebels and Bulldogs for real? We moved them into the top 25 on the strength of those series wins and other parts of what they've done so far this season. But how are you feeling about them now as they come off these big home series wins to start SEC play?
I think that both are honestly for real. I think starting with Mississippi State, with the louder of the 2 series wins over previously number 2 LSU, they're a really well-rounded team. I think even with, you know, missing Nate Doan, and hopefully that is not a long-term issue, because I think that having him healthy and performing is that drastically raises the ceiling of this team. But Gerangelo Sinte, the progress that he's made from last year to this year is astounding. Like last year, he was more this, he still had really good stuff and extremely high-end arm talent. Well, both arm talent. But this year he looks way more the part of an actual pitcher in an ace. And I think that his contributions are immeasurable. I think that they have some really good pieces in the bullpen. Nolan Stevens, we saw the length that they can get out of him. Brooks Auger has come back and looked good. So has I the back of the baseball card might not be super loud with him, but Cam Schulke again is, I think, someone they can feel pretty confident in trotting out. He attacks from three different arm angles, and I think the most underrated part of his game, which we saw, I believe, on Saturday night, was his ability with the glove and how he can feel this position. Like, it is a plus defender on the mound and legitimately like having another infielder out there. But switching to their lineup, it starts obviously with Dakota Jordan. He is, by a pretty wide margin, been the team's best and most productive hitter. The bat, he's just an absolute freak of nature. And then David Mershon's really stepped up. So I mean, I think that both the Bulldogs and the Rebels are for real. Like, with Ole Miss, we both had that series circled against South Carolina because Ole Miss had rather quietly been on a, I forget the number going into the series, but they were winners of maybe six of their last seven. And it was their first kind of prove it weekend. And they passed with flying colors. Like, I still believe that South Carolina is a high quality opponent. And when you talk about high powered lineup, like well-rounded teams, I think Ole Miss also fits the billing. Like, Andrew Fisher is a key piece. Ethan Legere has more home runs, more extra base hits, more walks than strikeouts. Transfer Jackson Ross has stepped up. Luke Hill is very quietly starting to come on, which I think is going to be a huge key. Same with Trayson Hughes, but not so quietly. I think I have a little bit more questions about the pitching staff with Ole Miss than I do Mississippi State, especially if Nate Dome is able to come back and be healthy, which is TBD. But I'm curious to see how that trio of Sonye, Maddox, and Gunnar Dennis hold up for, you know, the rest of the season, because there's big time arm talent. I'm curious if they slide Liam Doyle into that permanent weekend rotation spot. He looked really, really good in his Saturday start against a really good, I think, South Carolina lineup. Even with the lack of production, he struck out 10 across 5 1/3, I believe. I think that he would be a really key piece to have in that weekend rotation going forward. But long-winded answer short, I think that at least right now, both of these teams are comfortably looking like regional teams. And, you know, with where we have them slotted and other metrics and kind of looking at the whole body of work, they're absolutely going to be in the hosting picture. We'll just see for how long.
Yeah, I think that I was feeling pretty good about both teams coming into the weekend. I feel obviously much better about both as a result. Like, here's a hot take. I think I feel better about Ole Miss coming out of the weekend than Mississippi State. And I know that Mississippi State just really hammered LSU, and LSU's definitely the better team than South Carolina. But Mississippi State beat LSU a year ago. Like, what if they just have LSU's number, you know? Whereas Ole Miss didn't look good in a single SEC series all year last year. And so for the fact for them to go out and like get that series win, like, that felt like a bit of a bigger deal for me. I'm not here to diminish what Mississippi State did. Like, LSU's pitching staff had been exceptional going into that weekend. And, you know, they gave up 33 runs in Starkville. LSU was sixth in the nation in team ERA going into the weekend. Hunter Hines came alive. He hit three homers. He'd hit just one in the first 18 games. And, you know, I think that Mississippi State showed some nice depth to the lineup. Obviously, they've got the stars like Dakota Jordan, like Hunter Hines when he's going well, but Aaron Downs and Connor Huzdak, you know, there's a lot to work with for Mississippi State. But I just keep coming back to you. Ole Miss was so bad a year ago, like so bad. And they never looked good. They won, I think it was one SEC series. It was really late in the year. So for them to go out, win the first two games, get pretty solid starts out of Gunnar Dennis and Liam Doyle. And then I think what impressed me maybe the most of anything was what happened in the bullpen. They got five relievers to hold South Carolina to one run in those first two games. And you know, that's a big deal. Cause I think you're right, Peter. I think they have enough in the starting rotation. Like, they don't have the best rotation in the conference, but I think they have enough. And if the bullpen is going to be a little bit stronger, then I start to really like where they're at. And then the offense came through as well. Andrew Fisher hit three home runs in Saturday's win. And they had a lot of good things happening offensively, but on the mound is where the key developments were for me this weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that a nice cherry on top for the great weekend Ole Miss had was last night's win over Southern Miss, which might get overlooked in the grand scheme of things. But Southern Miss, again, is a team that we think rather highly of, given their ranking in this installment of the top 25. But again, last night, Riley Maddox turned in a quality start, four bullpen arms combined to throw three shutout innings. And it was a rather, like, for midweek games and where college baseball is right now, where so many of these end up lopsided, you get funky results, bad scores, bad play. It was crisp all around, especially from the Rebels. And I think that, you know, I'm with, you may have just sold me on Ole Miss over Mississippi State, but I'm impressed with both, and I'm curious to see how Ole Miss keeps this going. I think that this weekend against Tennessee is obviously its biggest test yet, and is going to be a really, really good barometer for where they stack up against the best of the best. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
Well, speaking of Tennessee, they went to Alabama last weekend in another one of these big top 25 showdowns. And, you know, Peter, it looked like for the longest time on Sunday that Tennessee was going to win the rubber game and get a really quality series win in Tuscaloosa. They won on Friday night going away. And then they had like a 17 game winning streak snapped on Saturday. And then Sunday, like I said, Tennessee was up most of that game. And then all of a sudden, Alabama struck for a few runs. Gage Miller comes through with the big home run in the eighth, and Alabama slams the door in the ninth with Aiden Moza, and they get the series win. I'm not concerned one bit about Tennessee after this weekend. In fact, I think I'm only encouraged. AJ Russell returned on Sunday. He only had like a couple innings to give them, but just getting him back was great, and give him a few weeks so he can get back up to full strength. And I mean, I love the Tennessee rotation with him in place, but Alabama showed a lot of fight. They really could have, it really could have gone sideways on them after the way they lost on Friday night, and it didn't. They came back, they won the series, they fought all weekend. And that's a really significant series win for Alabama.
Yeah, to your point, and I'm glad you brought it up. This past weekend was way more validating for Alabama than it was like a concern or me being concerned at all about Tennessee. I'm like you, my opinion remains completely unchanged. If not, I feel better about them because of how good Alabama is. But no, the Tide, it's, I mean, they're such a deep club on both sides of the baseball. And the one thing I like about them and is, you know, when you look at commonalities between all of these teams that make runs to the College World Series, or even end up hoisting the championship trophy when all is said and done, is a lot of them have experience, or at least a blend of kind of experience and newcomers. And you look up and down this Alabama lineup, and it is full of older guys, veteran guys. You know, TJ McCants, his resurgence has been really unbelievable to watch. He's hitting just around 400 with a team leading 10 home runs, also leads the team with 30 RBIs. Bryce Eblin was someone that I had the pleasure of watching this past summer on the Cape. I'm happy that he's performing to the level that he is, because on the Cape, man, he was just killing teams. He's got an advanced feel for the barrel. He plays the game super, super hard. Not a super prospecty kid, but just a grinder baseball rat type that, I mean, he's showing his value to the nth degree here early on. But again, Gage Miller stepping up, junior college transfer, the experience of Ian Petrutz and Evan Slight. And then you also throw in Matt Gassetti, who's quietly hitting over 320. And I think that freshman shortstop Justin LeBron right now, I think that he is well on his way to a potential first round draft choice in 2026, certainly top two rounds. But there are no easy outs in looking up and down that lineup on a game to game basis. There is no one that you have circled where it's like, okay, you know, we kind of get a little bit of a break here. They are relentless and they move the baseball. They take really good at bats. They can drive the baseball, just super well rounded. And I love that they have Eblen slotted in the nine hole. It's like a second leadoff guy, but switching to the rotation again, you talk about someone that has had a resurgence, Greg Ferrone, Louisville transfer. He's kind of had a long winding road in college baseball. He started at Herkimer Junior College where he won a national championship, then ended up at Louisville. So far he's, I mean, he's been really, really good in that Alabama rotation, up to 95 with his fastball, effective breaking ball, 25 Ks to just three walks and 21 innings with a sub two ERA. Obviously Ben Hess is like the name to know and rightfully so in that rotation, but Greg Ferrone stepping up has paid serious dividends. And then you look at the bullpen as well. Like it is super, super deep. Like Alton Davis, again, he is the dude back there, but Braylon Myers, Pierce George, you know, Tyler Fay to an extent, Aiden Moza, I think is still a really valuable piece, even though the numbers may not reflect it. You saw him come in on Sunday in really the biggest spot for any Bama pitcher to this point and get two huge strikeouts to lock up a series win. Zane Propst is someone that I think can be really effective. Like there, I think, and this is how they should feel. But I think that on both sides of the baseball, there are no pieces that that coaching staff or guys in the dugout don't feel confident in turning in a quality at bat or going out and getting three huge outs. Like I think that it is all hands on deck in Tuscaloosa. And I could not be more excited about this team. And from an SEC standpoint, they really don't get into the meat, I guess, of their schedule until second week in April. Again, like, and I say that because they get 17-4 Georgia this week, probably potentially a ranked South Carolina team next weekend, and then a Kentucky team that is right on the cusp of being ranked the following weekend. So I say that very lightly, but man, we use the term cheese ball at BA when talking about draft guys. Like Alabama might be a cheese ball type team for me. There's a lot to like.
I meant to ask you last week and I got distracted. Cage Miller draft, where like that dude is producing like one tick behind Caglione and Condon. If you look at just SEC sluggers, like he has been incredible for them so far. What are we feeling about him in July?
He's a top 10 rounder for me. I think he's going to be a really nice day two get for someone. And you look at, like, again, I think when you peel back the layers on Gage Miller, he's a JUCO kid, but he's also a really high level performer in the perfect game collegiate league. And I know that's not the Cape League. I know it's not the NECBL, but it is Woodbat summer baseball. And I believe he hit 11 home runs. And like he dominated the perfect game league. And I think having that track record with Wood and then obviously doing what he's doing so far this year and obviously in SEC play is, I mean, it's huge. And he's got bat speed, he's got plus power to the pull side. The track record of performance is there. For me, he fits somewhere in that 7-10 round range. And if he keeps playing the way he is, it's going to look more like 6-9 potentially. When all is said and done. So he's absolutely a top 10 rounder for me right now.
One more SEC series to get to, and that is Vanderbilt sweeping Auburn. And, you know, I was high on Auburn coming into the year. I really believed, I mean, I'm not high on them now, like, but coming into the year, I was really high on them. I had a lot of belief. Vanderbilt made it look relatively easy this weekend, and I think that just says a lot about where the Commodores are at and not so much about where Auburn is at, but there's a lot of angst about the Vanderbilt start to the season, a lot about how their offense looked. They've won 13 in a row now, and this weekend they scored 33 runs against Auburn. They just did everything you would want them to do. The offense, the Vanderbilt offense is absolutely on fire right now going into a big series at South Carolina. But I was very impressed. We knew what they could do in terms of the rotation it seems like they've really settled down now, and that Holton and Fittrell have worked into it, and Cunningham is still doing his thing. But offensively, you know, Alan Espinal, their veteran catcher, had a great week. But, you know, you could look up and down the lineup and say, well, that guy had a great week too, and so did that guy. And it was just a really comprehensive team performance by Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about well-rounded, like, that is Vanderbilt right now to a T. And I think that also Carter Holton returning completely into form, if not even better than expected, has been huge. I think in his last two starts, which has spanned 12 innings, I think he's allowed only one earned run and has notched 20 Ks. And then you look at this weekend, Alan Espinal is like, he was super highly regarded coming into school and was someone that they were excited about. And now, even though it's taken a little while, he's really, really put it all together. And the contributions have been invaluable. He went 10 for 16 this past week. He leads the team in hitting. RJ Austin has really stood out as well. And this weekend, they did it all without Cameron Kozel, who has been, up until he was hurt, he played on Saturday and on, he played on Saturday, but nonetheless, they did it without Cameron Kozel for two of the three games. Jonathan Vastine has come around. Davis Diaz, I know he had a four-hit game. He's another really valuable piece to that lineup. Like, everyone is hitting, and then you throw in supplemental pieces like Matthew Polk and Jacob Humphrey, and, you know, you're rolling 10, 11, 12 deep of guys that you can feel really, really good about. Like, I know that Vanderbilt in the past, and at least recently, has been known as a pitching first type school and a pitching first type program historically, but this offense is super, super high powered. They hit absolute lasers all over the field, up and down the lineup. And then the rotation has really, really looked good as well. And when it's come into the full picture of Cunningham, Holton and Futrell obviously are the two dudes that get a ton of love, and rightfully so, but man, Bryce Cunningham has looked really, really good in his five starts. You talk about someone that has really helped himself out from a draft standpoint, and I mean, he's seen his stock kind of skyrocket from the summer and now into the spring, and it only keep going up if he performs in SEC play. And then with the bullpen as well, like, there are, you know, you have so many guys that you can feel confident in trotting out there, and even younger guys like Ryan Ginther and Brennan Sieber. And then you throw in like Miller Green, Alex Kranzler has given you valuable innings. When Grayson Carter is throwing strikes, he is one of the toughest guys to hit in the country, if not the toughest guy to hit. He throws absolute noise. So this is a really deep, a really complete team. And since that 9-8 loss to Gonzaga, they, I believe, have won their last 16 games or 14 games.
16 of 17.
Yeah, 15 of 17.
14 straight now, 16 of 17 since then.
Yeah, 14 in a row. And, I mean, I'm not to look ahead, but I'm really, really excited for that first weekend in April series at the Box. I think that is going to be an absolute showdown. So this is kind of looking like the early 2010s Vanderbilt all over again.
So let's look ahead, not quite that far, but let's look ahead to this weekend. We do get Thursday SEC baseball. So if you're not watching the basketball tournament on Thursday night, you can tune into Arkansas and Auburn, or Mississippi State and A&M. And those series are both quite tasty. And I really would like a word with whoever made the schedule makers on that one. Also this weekend, we get Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and Florida, LSU. Peter, again, some great series here. Let me pull the championship rematch off the board. Let's say you cannot say Florida at LSU. Which SEC series this weekend are you most interested in / excited by?
That's a great question. I think in circling back to the two Mississippi schools and the Magnolia State, it's hard to not get excited about Mississippi State at A&M and then Ole Miss at Tennessee. Ole Miss at Tennessee, I know I touched on, and then Mississippi State at A&M to kind of a similar extent. I'm just really excited to see how the Bulldogs stack up. I know that they're fresh off a win against LSU. I'm excited to see how they look going to College Station, which is another, you know, it's a really, really hard place to play. A&M is obviously an excellent team. I'm curious to see what, I'm just kind of curious to see how it unfolds. So those are the two I'm most excited about.
I think that's fair that in both cases, they have not been on the road much. You know, Ole Miss was on the road opening weekend at Hawaii, but like this is going to be different for both of those teams. Great job on winning tough home series last weekend. Now let's go to Knoxville and College Station and see how that goes. Like it's brutal what the SEC does here. And so I think those are two very interesting ones. I will say Arkansas and Auburn, because with the Hogs, they swept Missouri last weekend. They gave up one run on the weekend, and that came in like the seventh inning on Sunday. Things are going to get a little more real. Going to Auburn is not easy. And right now, they are number one in the country, and they certainly look the part, but they have a chance over the next two weekends, going to Auburn and then hosting LSU in a week, to really put a like definitive, yes, this is the number one team in the country kind of statement out there. And I think that starts on Thursday with this opportunity. LSU and Florida, let's just spend a second on that. We haven't had a national championship rematch in the following season since Vanderbilt played Michigan on opening day in 2020. This is a little bit different, of course, since it is a conference series and it's a series. That was one game in the MLB 4 tournament. This one, they both need it. Florida just is in constant need right now, given that they, you know, everything we said about them, like they have not given themselves any breathing room. LSU coming off of a really tough series loss and just not playing the kind of baseball they wanted to play at all over the weekend. So a big weekend at the box, I think, for both teams. And if LSU can get back on track, that would probably make them feel a whole lot better before they go on the road to Arkansas in a week. Flip side, you know, Florida just, again, like they just need to find something to string together in terms of momentum, because right now it's just bouncing all over the place. So if they can get a big series win here, that might make them, it certainly would make them feel a lot better as they go back home.
Yeah. Bigger for Florida, I would say. Obviously big for LSU too, to right the ship and avoid a little bit of a snowballing scenario. But with Florida, we're kind of back to where we were last week with talking about how they kind of really need that A&M series, because I mean, if they lose this LSU series, regardless of whether or not they get swept, they're going to be coming out of this weekend at best at 13-10. And you kind of start looking at the optics of that and it gets a little bit wonky. And on the flip side with LSU, for a lot of reasons, I think it's hard to not feel more confident about the Tigers coming into this weekend. I think that Luke Holman getting hit around was a little bit of an anomaly on Friday night. Thatcher Hurd, I know, continues to be a little bit iffy. And then I'm curious to see how the lineup looks. Like Tommy White and Hayden Travinsky have been the two biggest producers. Jared Jones has stepped up as well. Stephen Malam has looked really good as a true freshman, but he quietly has kind of been in a little bit of a rut. So I'm interested to see how that holds up. And if it gets into it, if these games kind of take on the form of a slugfest, I'm looking forward to seeing at least if LSU and their lineup can go toe-to-toe with Florida's. But with all that being said, I think that I am fairly confident that LSU is going to bounce back here with at least two of three. I'm not sure where your head lies, but it's kind of hard to bet against the Tigers in the box, especially against Florida this week.
Yeah, I mean, Florida going on the road to Alex Box Stadium has their work cut out for them. And, you know, like last week, they gave up all those runs. They didn't field particularly well. You got to think that gets better. And yeah, LSU has proven more to this point. So, of course, you're going to feel better about them, especially at home. So big weekend for both of these teams. I will say, though, that if LSU takes a series loss this weekend, if they lose their first two SEC series and then have to hit the road to Arkansas, like that it starts to get tough at that point.
And then you've got Vanderbilt after that too. And then Tennessee. So it's like,
Like, it's not must win for a number of reasons, but it would, everybody would feel a whole lot better in Baton Rouge, I think, if they got a series win this weekend. And like, if Florida doesn't get the series win, it's not like anything's on fire there. It's just like, why are you 13-10? Why can't you be a little more normal than this? But they do have some pretty significant wins already banked with Miami and Texas A&M. So it would just kind of reinforce the, like, what is wrong here and like why, but like, we're probably going to ask those questions anyway. So the pressure is on both teams for sure. But I do feel like there's a fair amount on LSU to get something out of this weekend. Let's get a quick break in before we come back and talk some ACC baseball here. We've got some exciting series on tap, some big series to recap as well. So we'll get into that here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about using Indeed is how it does a lot of that organizational work for me. I can sort through candidates. I can respond to them. I can schedule interviews all through Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Peter, let's talk Clemson, because Clemson last weekend went to Duke and they won a series, and a ridiculous series, frankly. Duke won on Friday night behind Jonathan Santucci, and then Clemson won close games the next 2 days. Sunday's game was a wild affair. Extra innings, Duke nearly walked it off in the ninth inning. They had a runner thrown out at home plate. They had another chance in the 10th inning after Clemson pushed ahead. But in the end, Clemson goes to Durham, gets a series win. And you know, this weekend they face undefeated Florida State. We can get to that in a second, but as Clemson opens ACC play, I mean, just what a 1-2 in terms of Duke and Florida State, but also big credit to Clemson for bouncing back and finding a way to win that series in Durham.
Yeah, it's quite the gauntlet to start off ACC play, but like you said, a huge series win to start it off. I think with maybe a little bit to a lesser extent than Tennessee and Alabama, I think that this weekend was a lot more validating for Clemson than it was concerning for Duke. I think that some of the like question marks I had or maybe concerns, I guess you could call them, about Duke did rear its head in terms of the bullpen reliance and lack of length from its starters outside of Jonathan Santucci. I know Andrew Healy left after just an inning on Saturday. I don't think it was performance related. We'll see what comes of that.
Well, I was told he's fine in terms of health.
Yeah. We'll see how that shakes out. And then on Sunday they were missing Kyle Johnson and they didn't get a ton of length out of Tim Noone. I don't know if it was by design, if it was going to kind of be an all hands on deck type of game, but like the wear and tear, I think, is showing a little bit in the bullpen. I know it was an uncharacteristically bad appearance for Charlie Bielenson, who had otherwise been legitimately lights out. But like, that is the one thing I'm going to be watching with Duke as the season rolls on. Like if they can get some stability behind Santucci and really just how the bullpen holds up, because I do think that the lineup, which got overlooked coming into this season, You know, it's very much for real. Like, they hit this weekend against a really good Clemson pitching staff, and all of that. So I'm not worried there, but going to Clemson, man, they're just a really, really good team. And I know that sounds simple, but you look at the personnel that they have, and like, they have veterans that have really stepped up. Jimmy Overtop came up with two of maybe the biggest swings he's had in his career to this point, with big home runs on Saturday and Sunday. Blake Wright has gotten going. Will Taylor has quietly gotten going. Alden Mathis, a Richmond transfer, has arguably been the team's best hitter to this point. And Cam Cannarella is Cam Cannarella. He's an absolute tool shed, potential five-tool upside, will be discussed at 1-1 for 2025. And then the rotation is, I mean, I really like it. I know that Austin Gordon has kind of struggled to get into form. He's got hit around a little bit, but Tristan Smith has looked, you know, every bit of a viable number two starter. He's even looked like a Friday guy at points during this year. He's got an electric fastball from the left side with a really good changeup to boot. Struck out 10 on Saturday. And then Aiden Nock, the true freshman that they have, man, he has looked really, really good. And he looked excellent on Sunday, only allowed one earned, struck out 9, pounds the strike zone. He's got an advanced field of spin. And then when you look at the bullpen, I really like that trio of Lucas Malmsted, Rob Hughes, Matthew Markle. Like, there are probably 5 to 6 pieces in there, and experienced ones at that, where you can feel confident in getting 1, 2, perhaps even 3 innings out of. And I think when you're trying to poke holes in this team, it's pretty tough to do so. And they did this weekend without Nolan Naraki, who to this point is hitting .381. He's in the, I think, the middle of a potentially breakout sophomore year. He's only had 46 at bats, I think. So we'll see how it transpires when he comes back, whenever that is. But so far, so good for him. And I know we'll get into it probably in a few minutes, but this weekend is like, I am so, so intrigued by this series for both teams and for a lot of reasons. So I can't wait.
The Clemson team just is incredibly well-rounded. I find it hard to like focus on any one thing because they just seem to do everything well without like Cannarella is the superstar, but they don't have like a ton of those guys. You know, they just have a bunch of really good baseball players. On Duke, I am concerned. Kyle Johnson is going to be out about a month. This is 2 weeks in a row that Andrew Healy hasn't gone terribly deep into the game. I think it's pretty clear that Duke just doesn't care about getting depth from its starters. I just don't know how far that's going to take them. And like, this is a thing that they did a year ago. Like, this is something I'm like really paying attention to, that I'm probably going to write about at some point. But, you know, like, they nearly made it to Omaha last year. It's true. But I just, it seems like a very difficult path to walk. Charlie Bielenson has been, as you said, he's been lights out. He has 8 saves already, which he is on pace, and like, saves are a really difficult thing to be on pace for. But if he continued at that pace, he would break the single season saves record nationally, which is 24, held by David Berg, rather. You know, that just doesn't seem sustainable that like, you're trying to win all these close games, and Bielenson has some like multi-inning saves in there. It's not like that means that Duke is up 2 or 3 runs every 9th inning. Sometimes that means they just gave Bielenson the ball a little early, but it's, I don't know. I just don't know what, like, I definitely think Clemson's the better team here, but like, Duke went through all of that and still nearly won this series. So like, I don't know. I'm a little confused by what to think of Duke, but it's clear they're a really good team and that they can, they're going to cause a lot of problems within the ACC if they aren't able to, catch Clemson to win it, but they're certainly going to be a problem for every ACC team out there.
Yeah, I mean, to to kind of hone in on like the one thing that I'll be watching with Duke, and the one thing that might end up doing him in the end is, like you said, is just the kind of how the bullpen holds up. I think it comes down to that. Like, I feel really confident in them being able to hit. Santucci is Santucci. If Andrew Healey can round back into form, that would be extremely valuable for them for a ton of reasons. Getting Kyle Johnson back, who is supremely talented, is going to help. But I'm just curious, like, as the weeks roll on, how vaunted is this bullpen still? So it'll be interesting to watch transpire.
Florida State remained undefeated with a sweep of Notre Dame to open their ACC slate. They are now up to 19-0 after winning on Tuesday night, and that means they are undefeated going into Clemson this weekend. That's a big one, Peter. Clemson, Florida State, talked about how good Florida State is, how improved they are. I wrote about it at length last week. This weekend feels like the series for ACC supremacy, in part because Wake Forest lost a series at Virginia last weekend. We can get into that here in a second, but suffice it to say that Wake Forest does not look like the preseason number one team, and in many ways is not, because of the injuries that they're dealing with. They're just not the same team that we ranked number one coming into the year. And Virginia has all of the pitching problems that they do. So, like, I really think at this point it looks like a tier of Florida State, Duke, and Clemson at the top. And I think it would be safe to say that the winner of this weekend in Clemson is going to have staked its claim as the ACC front runner, get almost to the halfway point of the college season.
Yeah, and that tier at the top, one, I'm in agreement that it's Clemson, FSU, and Duke. And two, I think that there is a somewhat sizable gap between that next tier. I'm really intrigued, though, by Virginia Tech and UNC kind of waiting in the wings, so to speak, and then also Miami to an extent. But it, for me, it is those three and kind of everyone else. But with FSU, I know that they're also kind of a hot-button topic with obviously the undefeated start, but then people will kind of look at the schedule and be like, well, who have they beat? One, they've got that key midweek win over Florida. And 19-0 is 19-0. Like, baseball is so hard and such a weird sport. And like, one bad bounce, one bad pitch can do you in for a game. And the fact that they've been able to remain this consistent and playing this well and win all kinds of styles of games. You saw a 1-0 win over Stetson last night. Like, the offense is equipped to get into a slugfest game, kind of a more sloppier played game like last week's Florida game was. Like, this team, for me, like, I am very, very bought in on them. And even more so when you look at the personnel that they have. Jamie Arnold on Friday nights has emerged as, in an ACC that features Jonathan Santucci, Chase Burns, Josh Hartle, Michael Massey, like a lot of good arms, he is right there when talking about the best arms in the conference. And he's they're going to have him and Cam Leiter back next year. And Jamie Arnold this year has allowed one earned in 27 and two-thirds innings with 44 Ks, so just five walks. An unbelievable stat line. He's a low slot lefty. Fastball just explodes out of his hand up to 95, 96 with what I think to be a plus longer sweeping slider that is just hellacious on lefties. And then you focus on Cam Leiter, again, one of the premier sophomore arms in the country, thunderous fastball, big time curveball, first round type upside in 25. There have been so many bullpen pieces that have stepped up. Carson Dorsey is one, a junior college transfer, another really tough look lefty. Brennan Oxford, grizzled veteran guy, that kind of that slow heartbeat, calming presence on the mound that you can feel really confident in. Andrew Armstrong, you can use him in a myriad of roles. And then when you look at the lineup, I mean, they've got two first rounders in Cam Smith and James Tibbs, who are the two leading hitters on the team. Drew Ferreau, someone that's taken a big step forward since transferring. And then you sprinkle in all of these supplemental pieces like Daniel Cantu, Jaime Ferrer, Alex Lodice, who's hitting well to start. He's come on as of late. Marco Dinguez. like, this is such, to me, it is one of the more complete teams in the country, and one that probably doesn't get talked about as enough as one of the more complete teams in the country. Like, I'm trying to find a hole for them. And it's really, really hard to do so because, one, they're 19-0, and two, there haven't really been any glaring red flags for me so far. Like, they're hitting .356, I believe, as a team. Their team ERA is sub .28. They're playing sound defense. Like, it is, it's really going good in Tallahassee right now.
You can scoff at the schedule if you want. I think it's fair. They've played, I believe, just one game against a team that I would project to make the NCAA tournament. That's the win against Florida. Otherwise, it just has not been impressive. It also hasn't been a slate of nothing. Like, if you're going to sit here and complain about their schedule, like, that's fine. But it's really missing the point of this. They're 19-0. They're playing exceptionally well. And, you know, it's not like they're playing a bunch of teams that are going to end up in the 200s in RPI. They're playing okay teams at best, but they haven't slipped up. And if you look at the talent, you look at Leiter and Arnold at the front of the rotation, and now that Whitaker has joined them in the weekend rotation, that looks really good. They've got star power offensively, and they're one of the best fielding teams in the country, which is a huge improvement over last season. So, I mean, yeah, like what Peter's saying, they're one of the more complete teams out there. And, you know, we'll find out exactly how good they are this weekend at Clemson, I suppose. But, like, even if they went out and got swept, they're still a really good team. They are worthy of the attention and more that they're getting, I would say. I'm not ready to say that this team's going to Omaha or anything like that. There's a lot of lack of experience out there that we don't know what they would handle in NCAA tournament thing. But they don't have to, we don't have to make that determination now. They don't have to be ready to handle that environment right now. That's what the next couple months are for. I do think that they're going to stick in this ACC race the rest of the season, and that starts this weekend at Clemson. So really big series, of course, there. Let's talk Wake and Virginia. This is where I was last weekend, and Peter, how about this one? Wake Forest is 9-6 in games Chase Burns doesn't start.
Oh, that's there are a lot of good Teddy Cahill nuggets. That's a really good one, and it was not so good.
It was 8-6 before yesterday. It actually felt like a better one before yesterday. Now it's like, 9-6. Okay, you know. But like, this was the number one team in the country. And this is a piece that I'm working on right now. Hopefully you'll be able to read this over at baseballamerica.com soon. But like, what has gone wrong for them is a lot of things have gone wrong. A lot of things have gone from this was the preseason number one team to this is a team that's sitting there at 14-6. They are very injured right now. Nick Kurtz got hurt on Friday night at Virginia and is going to miss at least 3 to 4 weeks with a shoulder injury that he suffered while diving for a ground ball. Michael Massey did not start against Virginia. He is dealing with a hamstring injury that they don't really know when he's going to be right. Hamstrings are tricky that way. Cole Rowland still not pitching. Areola just got back into the bullpen. He's made, I think, 2 appearances now. Maybe it's 3. I didn't see if he pitched yesterday. They haven't had the Merrick Houston missed a little bit of time. He's back. He's fine now. But like, they just haven't been able to run out their best team hardly at all this season. And so that's a problem. Also a problem is Josh Hartle, who was an All-American a season ago and is just not pitching like it right now. Virginia knocked him out in the third. That's 2 really bad starts in a row, and it's not going to get any easier for him. Like, he has to figure some things out. And Chase Burns has been great, but we talked previously about how like they've actually had some guys step up, like Jack Winnay and Adam Tellier, and they've had some of that, but they just don't have, they never were going to have the depth to withstand a bunch of injuries. That was never what made this team great, but they're now facing all of these injuries. There's time for them to get healthy. There's time for them to figure things out. But it's been a tough first month of the season for Wake Forest, and that showed this weekend. They lose on Friday, 16-10. Virginia scored 15 of those runs in two innings. They win on Saturday with Burns, and it looks like they're going to win on Sunday. It looks like Wake is going to come away with a pretty solid road series win. And then it just fell apart late, and there was a strange, strange error on the final play of the game, and Virginia walks it off. And, if that play goes differently, maybe you're feeling different about Wake Forest right now, but those are the margins. And I think that goes to show they're still a good team, but the fact of the matter is they've lost consecutive series to open ACC play now.
I know I went on a little bit of a tangent last week about it, but like they're literally just giving games away. And I know that this is probably some of the points that are being made in that locker room right now, but on Tuesday, they gave up 22 free bases to Coastal Carolina, 17-9 loss. Friday, 13 free bases, 16-10 loss. Sunday, 18 free bases, and they somehow only lose by a run on kind of a fluky walk-off play. And taking out Chase Burns and honestly taking out Jack Winnay and Adam Tellier, who to this point have, I mean, they've been the team's two best hitters, surprisingly.
It's
so.
It's not like, been close.
Right, exactly. Like, it is those two guys and everyone else, including Seaver King and Nick Kurtz. I know Kurtz is banged up.
It's not like Kane and Kurtz have been terrible, but like
King especially has come on as of late and is kind of like rounding into form, but it really has been Tellier and Winnay. But that aside, and you take Chase Burns out of the equation, who has looked like the best arm in the country, they literally are handing teams games, which has to be, if it's this frustrating for me, I can't even imagine how the coaching staff feels and how everyone in that locker room feels, because it is like, it's infuriating to watch. And when you kind of start to look at, okay, who can we go to after Chase Burns? Who can we go to after Chase Burns, and who's going to get us outs on Friday and now Sunday without Massey, and kind of hoping that Hartle rounds back into form. William Ray has been good. Blake Morningstar is like, he continues to kind of round into form and is looking like someone that is going to be a key piece for him down the stretch. Hayden LaFeu, I know, is someone that they were excited about. He's logging pretty meaningful innings, primarily as a midweek guy, but he's gotten hit around. Zach Johnson at times has looked really like, I think that he gives you a funky, different look, kind of a soft tossing lefty, nothing straight. I think that's valuable to have. And then outside of that, it's like, man, like you kind of just have to close your eyes and pray one of these guys are going to step up and give you one to two good innings, even three outs. And I know that they're dealing with injuries. I know that when Cole Rowland comes back and when Crawford Wade comes back, that's going to really lighten the load on everyone else. But until those two come back, and especially Rowland, which as far as I know, there's no real timetable on that. I know before the season, it was very tentatively like the middle of ACC play, which can be interpreted in a number of ways. So who knows when he's back, but even after he's back, like there's only so much one back end of the bullpen guy can do and how much of a difference he can make. Like the bottom line is, and I hate to be so matter of fact about it, there multiple arms on this staff need to step up or they're going to be done in the first week of June.
Yeah. It's definitely a situation where like, I think, not only do they need multiple arms, like you're saying, but I think everyone knows exactly who they need to step up. Like
right.
if Josh Hartle doesn't get back to being Josh Hartle, this team just cannot go to where it wants to be. And like, one of the other reporters there on Saturday, like Jack Winnay hit had some big hits. I think he hung on Saturday, the first game without Nick Kurtz. And like, it was definitely meant as a joke and everyone understood it was a joke, but he was like, oh, you don't even need Nick Kurtz, like Jack Winnay is doing so well. And everyone understood that that was a joke. And yet the response was still like, no, like we need Nick Kurtz. From Tom Walter, he was like, let's be honest with ourselves here. Like we need Nick Kurtz to do what we want to do. And the fact of the matter is they need to get healthy and they need to get right on the mound. And they're in the thick of it now. Like, they don't have a lot of time to sit around and wait for these things to happen. It's just not where they thought they were going to be. They're facing the most adversity they've faced as a program since 2021, which A is like, that's impressive. Like, they went through the last couple of years without this kind of stuff, but it does like raise the stakes a little bit, because last year they lost three straight games at one point last week. And, you know, that doesn't feel like a lot, but they didn't even lose consecutive games last year until the LSU ended their season with consecutive wins. If you look in 2022, they did have a similar stretch where they lost back-to-back series, and I think they lost four straight at one point, but that was the only time in the last 2 years. And that was pretty deep into the season. They'd built some stuff up by that point. They'd built confidence and everything. So I just feel like this is a really tough spot for them. Credit to them for going out and getting a win on Tuesday against High Point. Now they've got Louisville this weekend, and
that feels like a must-win series for
both teams. Louisville coming off of a series loss against Virginia Tech. Maybe that's overdoing it for Louisville, but yeah, I think that Wake Forest probably would say that it's probably a must-win series. I was surprised, to flip this to Virginia quickly, Brian O'Connor like outright said, like, not off the record, nothing, like on the record, two reporters said that it was a must-win series against Wake Forest, and that surprised me a little bit. But they got the series win that they apparently felt like they really needed, coming off of that Miami series loss. It was not pretty. It's not going to be pretty for most of the season with Virginia. We're talking about like how Wake needs multiple arms to step up. Virginia needs multiple arms to step up. The difference, though, is that Virginia's offense is operating like, Peter, who has a better offense in the country than Virginia? Like, they are nuts right now. So like, their pitching staff, there's a lot less pressure on them, but they still need some. You still have to get 27 outs. It doesn't matter how good your offense is. I feel like there are some developments to feel okay about. Like, we talked about Brandon Neely at the top of the show and how he threw five scoreless innings and how big that was for Florida's bullpen. Well, Jack O'Connor came in and he threw three scoreless to finish Friday's game, and that was huge. And he was pretty good when they brought him back on Sunday. Not quite as good, I don't think. But if he can like provide that sort of thing in the bullpen, and that would be big for them. But they still need more.
Yeah, given how vaunted their offense is, like you said, it takes some of the load off the pitching staff, but you can't sustain a run at least that far deep into June, winning like 16 to 10, 11 to 10, 12. Like, you can't win shootouts for 3 months. So I'm curious to see, especially what happens on Sundays, because I think that 1-2 punch they've recently found with McKay and Blanco, I think that gives you two fairly reliable starters at the front of your rotation. I know McKay got hit around a little bit.
Neither one was great against Wake, but they were fine. And I think they're going to be good enough going forward, like you're saying.
Right. And to Wake's credit, like, they do have a pretty deep lineup, not as deep as it was last year, and certainly not as deep as people were projecting it to be. But, you know, there are still five, six or so bats in there that, you know, you have to be worried about. But going back to UVA, I'm just more focused on what they do and what they end up doing on Sundays, which has been my man Silhouette TBA for the last few weeks. In looking at the team and the personnel that they have, I kind of like Owen Cody potentially in that role, Penn transfer, lefty strike thrower. I think that you can just get five plus good innings out of him, and he's someone that can keep you in a game and not have it unravel a little bit. And if that ends up working out and you now stick Jay Woolfolk back in the bullpen, and with Jack O'Connor pitching the way that he has and kind of finding himself in a relief role, I think that it's a little bit of shuffling, but it could go a really long way for a pitching staff that right now has an ERA right around six. And then when you talk about the lineup, there are no holes. Like, there's no guy in there that's an easy out. Everyone can hit. Everyone can really drive the baseball. Henry Godbout has really, really come on as a sophomore. The bat to ball skills and feel for the barrel are outstanding. Casey Sockey is someone from a draft standpoint I don't feel like is getting enough love. I think that he's like a top 3-4 round type. Harrison Didowick, similarly, a guy that we had tabbed as a player to know / breakout player. He's hitting really well. Big league body, is present bat speed has started to tap into some more power. And then Henry Ford, it's safe to say that he's going to be the next really great hitter to come out of UVA. And this is all without like Griffin O'Farrell, without Griff O'Farrell and Ethan Anderson being world beaters. Like, it's
Ethan Anderson's lesser. Hitting eight.
Right. Like, Anderson's hitting eighth. They're both hitting sub 300 right now. And if you had told me that, like, if you had told me before the season that, hey, on March 20th, Ethan Anderson is going to be hitting in the eight hole, and both him and Griff O'Farrell are hitting under 300, and those were the only two things I knew about UVA, I would have no clue what to think, but I wouldn't think that they'd be 17-4. So, like, yes, they have a lot of question marks, perhaps, I don't know if you can call them issues, but question marks for sure on the pitching side of things. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they address those, because it's clear that they're trying to. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how they proceed here.
Yeah, important weekend for them on the road at Pitt. UVA just generally, I mean, every team is better at home than on the road, but UVA has had some like tricky splits over the years. This is a big weekend because it could be a catch your breath weekend. I know we've said some nice things about Pitt, but they have not started ACC play well. So if UVA is able to use this weekend to get a little bit of answers before they go to Durham in 2 weeks and then have UNC come in, that would be very good for them if they were able to maybe find an answer on Sunday. But we'll have to see on that one. Elsewhere in the ACC, Georgia Tech swept NC State. Virginia Tech went on the road to beat Louisville. Miami won the first two games in the most ridiculous series against UNC. Like, the way the scores swung, like, Friday night was a total blowout for UNC. Then we got basically even. Miami won 2-1, and then it was a total blowout for UNC on Sunday. Like, a very strange series. I don't know what to make of most of those teams. Virginia Tech's off to a sizzling start. Miami has a couple of really good ACC series wins, but like a lot of really bad losses in there as well. UNC, NC State both have some pitching questions. Georgia Tech pitching questions. Like, I don't really know. I'm curious to see where all of those teams go from here, but some intriguing series results beyond the two big ones.
Yeah, I think outside of that, going back to that top tier of teams of Clemson, FSU, and Duke, I think that there are a lot of really solid teams, but they all have their fair share of question marks. I might be most intrigued at this point about Virginia Tech, and they've kind of flown under the radar, at least to me. They can really swing it, is just how they have been in recent years. But the pitching staff is also one of the more underrated ones, I'd say, in the ACC. Freshman Brett Renfro has looked really, really good, and he's taken the Friday role by the horns and has emerged as their ace of the future, ace of the present, really. And then Griffin Stieg has bounced back. Wyatt Parliament's another solid option. So curious to see how they do. And then with Miami, similarly, I think that like the optics of the series wins that they have notched look really good, but at the end of the day that they're still kind of sitting at 12-8 with a little bit of work to be done. I do like the bones of that club though. And then with NC State, swept by Georgia Tech, go out last night and notch a much, much needed win over number 22 Coastal, which was huge. And then Georgia Tech, just like they've been able to in the past, can really swing it, led by looking like at this point, kind of the runaway national freshman of the year, unless something changes, Drew Burris.
Daniel Cantu has something to say about that, but not Cantu.
Cuvée.
Daniel Cuvée.
I would give the nod to Burris. And
I mean, Burris has better numbers, but like Cuvée's close.
Right. Absolutely. So, and both in the ACC as well. And then the pitching staff, they have a new look pitching staff and a new pitching coach, and they've been throwing the ball a lot better than they have in years past. That's another thing I'm curious to see how it holds up. So there are no real slouches in the ACC, at least to this point. I know that a couple of teams or a few teams might be lagging behind the rest of the pack, but I don't think there is one terrible team in this conference.
No, absolutely not. And this weekend, in addition to the Florida State Clemson series, that is one of the best series of the weekend nationally, also keep an eye on Duke, NC State. A little bit of urgency for NC State on that one now, especially with it being at home, but a good series nonetheless. Let's go to the Big 12 before we round this one out. Peter, I don't know what to think of the Big 12 anymore. We came into this season, TCU was the runaway favorite in the Big 12, not just for us. Look at, like, literally any publication. Look at their own coaches poll. TCU, runaway favorite in the Big 12. What have they done so far? They're 1-5 in Big 12 play after getting swept at home by Oklahoma, which is 6-0 to start Big 12 play. So first of all, shouts to the Sooners. Peter, good job on you. Coming into the season, I was kind of down on Oklahoma. You were feeling a lot better. They are playing quite well right now. Elsewhere in the conference, Texas Tech went on the road and lost to Baylor, who has been terrible to this point. Texas was playing conference ball, and they lost a series to Washington at home. Washington, not done a whole lot to this point. West Virginia doesn't have J.J. Weatherholt still. Like, Houston lost a series to BYU. I could keep going here. It's a confusing conference. Let's just celebrate Oklahoma for a second, though. You were ahead of the game on the Sooners. What do you got there?
Well, one, and kind of to your point, like, yes, Oklahoma is playing really well, but in the grand scheme of things, I have no idea how to feel about the Big 12. Like, I think it might just be a little bit like last year, or a lot like last year, where everyone is just beating up on each other for the next couple of months, and then we kind of sort it all out.
100%. And by the way, they're tracking towards one host. Like, yeah, I'm already there. Like, RPI doesn't mean much of anything yet, but like, I just looking at these results, like, they're tracking towards one host again. And I look forward to Big 12 coaches complaining about that again, but, you know, whatever.
It's going to be a mess. At least it's looking like for the next 8 weeks or so. But no, with credit to Oklahoma, like, I was intrigued by that lineup coming into the year, and they've exceeded my somewhat high expectations. Especially, like, John Spykerman was a guy that I know he didn't have the world beating sophomore year that some might have expected him to, but I really liked him coming out of the 2022 summer on the Cape, and he's kind of finally now rounding into form at the collegiate level. He can really go and get it in center field. He's at least a plus defender. He's a double plus runner. Bat to ball skills are fantastic. Sophomore, all kind of almost all world catcher, Easton Carmichael, hitting really well. He's looking like he's going to be a Team USA type of guy. And then Washington transfer Michael Snyder has really, really stepped up. He's someone that in the NECBL, I believe it was in the 2022 summer, he won the batting title with Martha's Vineyard hitting over 400. And I know that the college performance may not have tracked, but he is finding that form again, at least to this point in Norman. And then Jackson Nicholas again has been really steady for him. Veteran Kendall Pettis has stepped up. Carter Frederick, man, he's got thunderous bat speed. He's a huge, physical, imposing kid. I know he doesn't have a ton of at bats at this point, but he is super, super imposing in the batter's box, and he can change the game with one swing. And I think in the bullpen is what I've been most impressed with so far. Braden Davis, I know I just said the bullpen, but he's the Friday guy. But Friday guy Braden Davis, I know, like, the numbers aren't crazy, but he's got a legit plus changeup, deceptive lefty, hides the ball well, 90-93 or so. And then the Witherspoon twins in the bullpen, particularly Kyson, they have been dominant. And Kyson especially, he can go out and you can throw him potentially twice in a weekend and have him lock down a series for you. And Malachi as well, he's given good innings for him. Texas Tech transfer Brennan Gerton has looked good. So, like, I don't think that they boast this, like, crazy amount of depth, but it is a bunch of baseball rat, gritty type players. Nothing is going to come easy when playing them. I have no clue as to what their ceiling is, like I do every team in the Big 12, or like I have no idea for every team in the Big 12. But I do think that they're a very dangerous team and have that type of makeup where if they get hot at the right time, could have a 2022 type run in them, which is saying a lot, but they do have that type of makeup on this year's team.
Meanwhile, TCU, last week I thought I'd kind of identified their issue, and that it was that they weren't getting enough out of their starting rotation. And then this week they did a lot better with that. Still didn't matter. They're just not pitching as well as I thought they would, really, at any stage, I guess, at this point. I think it's fixable, but just nothing has really clicked for them. And that's a weird thing to say for a team that ran off 13 straight to start the season. But as we've detailed here before, like, that winning streak really masked some things. Like, they got a lot of luck. They won a lot of close games, and everyone could feel really good because they kept piling up wins. But as things have gotten harder, they haven't really been able to figure out that same kind of magic. They have a huge series this weekend at Oklahoma State, which is coming off of a series loss of its own at UCF. So both of those teams really could use something this weekend. And coming into the year, if you looked at the Big 12 schedule, you're probably like, oh, that'll be a really cool series, like two good teams going at it. And instead, it's a little bit of a, like, somebody's going to leave this weekend feeling pretty bad about themselves.
On the TCU front, it's more like I'm kind of feeling like it's just kind of a bummer. Like, I think that they're still a really good team, and the start is a little bit of an anomaly. I think that they are going to get rolling at some point, and given the lack of depth really in the Big 12, there's no reason why they couldn't rattle off however many series wins in a row. But I like the offensive firepower isn't totally there. Like, they're not really driving the baseball. They've got a few intriguing pieces, especially with Logan Maxwell and Sam Myers. Anthony Silva, I know, is plus defender at shortstop, potentially one of the best defensive shortstops in the country. He's swinging it well, but they lack guys that can really change the complexion of the game in one swing. I guess Curtis Byrne can to an extent. But outside of that, it's a lot of cobbling together and stringing together is what it hinges upon, which there's nothing bad about it. But when the pitching staff is kind of in this rut that it's in and is not going deep into games, I think it causes a little bit more problems. And I'm curious to see what happens with Braden Sloan. Like, he went out and struck out 13, I believe, against, I forget it who it was against, but he went out and struck out 13 in a midweek game. I know they shifted him to Sundays and the results have been mixed. Like, I think he figures it out. Cole Klecker, I think, eventually rounds into form. Peyton Tolley has started to do that. And then when you look at the bullpen, Benebelt is Benebelt. Like, he's one of the best late inning guys in the country, perhaps the best late inning guy in the country, if you talk to some. Luis Rodriguez, a sophomore, has really stepped up. Like, the pieces are there. They're just not, like, they're not clicking and they're not firing on all cylinders to this point. Do I think they eventually get there? Yeah, I do. And I think that they have a unique quality of being able to play their best baseball when it matters most. But right now it is a little bit tough sledding, but I do eventually think that they'll figure it out and kind of get in this rhythm. But so I'm not like crazy, crazy worried and about TCU, at least drastically, but it's gut check time because Oklahoma State, I know that they have not performed well to this point this season, but when you go to Obrate, it's a really, really hitter-friendly park, very offense-oriented. I'm like, if these games kind of get into a little bit of a slugfest-type feel, I'm interested to see if TCU is able to keep pace.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this being on the road is potentially problematic. Oklahoma State also just got Nolan Schubert back, which is important for them. They can feel a little bit better about their offense now. I share your sentiment with TCU. Like, they're going to figure it out, I would think. Like, they figured it out last year. It took them until May, but they did it. I just wouldn't want to be doing that again. And, like, it's March 20th, and I've already said RPI isn't super reliable yet and all the rest of that. However, I also said that the Big 12 probably is looking at one host spot. And, you know, there's time for that to change. But, like, part of that is because TCU hasn't played all that well. And if you want home baseball, like, last year they backed into it, right? Like, that's how they got the home super regional. They weren't supposed to have that. But if you want home baseball in June, they gotta step it up quick. This weekend would be a great way to start it, because you just really don't want to lose your first three conference series. It's been a little bit of a tough slate. At Kansas isn't supposed to be that tough, but they lost that one. But Oklahoma and Oklahoma State early, and you know, it gets easier from there. It's just hard to see that there's much separation between any of these teams. Like, TCU goes home to play Houston after that. Like, is that easier? I don't know. Like, all of these teams are approximately the same, it just feels like. And, you know, that there's a lot to be said for that. I'm sure some Big 12 fans hear me, like, being really down on the league, and it's like, but we have all this depth, we have parity, isn't that great? And, like, yeah, I mean, in a different league, I guess I would probably be celebrating this, and instead I'm down on it. Like, there's something to unpack there, but, you know, right now a lot just doesn't feel right with the powers in this league. Like, going on the road and losing to Baylor for Texas Tech last weekend, I mean, that one's rough. Baylor's 7-13 overall, and they just got beat real bad on Tuesday night. And Texas Tech couldn't find a way to win that series. Like, there's just little things like that all over, and not so little things like that all over this conference. And maybe it'll hold them back on Selection Sunday in terms of hosts. Maybe it'll help them get a bunch of teams in. I don't know exactly, but what I do know is right now I can't figure this league out for the life of me.
And when you talk about it being celebrated as opposed to being talked about, how we're talking about it, it's a lot different when it looks like this as opposed to how it looks in the ACC. And I think that's, you know, it's just what it comes down to. There's a ton of top end talent in the ACC. The teams behind that group are playing really well. And the same obviously can't be said right now for the Big 12. And if TCU comes out of this weekend at like 2-7, if they lose this series, or heaven forbid 1-8, but I think it'd be 2-7. Then it gets real. It gets really weird for them. So it's a big one.
Yeah, certainly one to keep an eye on for sure. We're not going to spend hardly any time in the Pac-12 yet again this week. My kind of apologies, but this is what the league has become.
Oregon State, Oregon, Cal, my top three.
My question, or the only thing I really want to talk about here is Utah gave Oregon State everything it could handle. They won on Sunday, first of all. And then on Saturday, the game was scoreless until the eighth inning. And on Friday, Oregon State required a ninth inning comeback to win. Are we sure about Oregon State? That's my question here.
In the scope of the Pac-12?
Well, in the scope of the Pac-12, yes, yes, we're sure about them. Are we sure about top? Like, they've been number four consecutive weeks here. We had chances to move them up. We didn't. And part of the reason is because they just haven't been convincing. I guess, is that a one-off or a two-off at this point? Or is that something that they, Beaver fans, need to be worried about all season long?
I don't know, because I think that a lot of their perhaps issues will likely get masked by the Pac-12 and the state of the Pac-12 and how it looks this year. So I think when you look at it from a tournament standpoint, though, like, yes, this lineup is super deep, one of the best in the country. Travis Bazana, there are other really nice pieces around him. Trent Carraway, I know, will be out for about a month or so, but I think it's deep enough to weather the storm of that. I'm most curious to see how the pitching holds up, though. Aiden May, there's still no real timeline on when he comes back. And a little bit like Nate Doan with Mississippi State, and maybe even a little bit more here with the Beavers, he drastically raises the ceiling of this team. And I think it gives them a lot of depth. It takes a lot of strain off the bullpen. But my main question kind of comes with the rotation. Jacob Kamats has been good to this point. And then after him on Saturdays and Sundays, it does get a little iffy. Like Eric Segura has shown flashes. Jaron Hunter has not really performed well to this point. I know they've experimented with Nelson Keljo, lefty flamethrower, with mixed results. I think he's pretty, by a pretty wide margin, way better in the bullpen. Bullpen's really good. It's just, I do have questions about the rotation. So Aiden May coming back would reassure me, but I like, they're 18-2, they're number four in the country, but it is not without some question marks. I'm not sure what your take is, but that's mine.
Yeah, I haven't formed like a full opinion on this yet. Like, I'm mildly concerned. But like, the Pac-12 is going to give them so much leeway, it looks like, to fix things, that like June is too far off for me to really worry about. But like, there's a reason why they're not number two right now. They could be number two in the country. Like, the easy, lazy thing the last couple of weeks would have been to make Oregon State number two in the country, but it just didn't feel right. And they've got time to work through it, I guess, is everything that I would have to say about this. They could use to get healthier, obviously. But if they don't, they've got time to find the right ways to make up for that. I do think Utah is solid. I still don't know exactly, but like, this weekend was super encouraging for Utah. And they now this weekend are at Cal, which is a pretty solid team themselves. Like, that this series, this Utah-Cal series, might have some actual tournament implications later on. So like, that's something to watch this weekend. UW is at Oregon State, coming off of that series win at Texas. I don't know what UW will be able to take forward from that weekend, but we'll see what they have to show for it. Arizona State beat Arizona in a very low-key rivalry series, or under the radar, I should say. I'm sure it wasn't low-key in the moment, but for such a good rivalry, that one flew way under the radar nationally. But the Sun Devils got an important series win and now hit the road to face Washington State, trying to build some momentum. But yeah, honestly, the series to watch this weekend might be Utah and Cal, and I believe that has literally never been said of a Utah-Cal baseball series in like the 10 years that Utah's been in the Pac-12.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I think that Cal especially, like, they could sneak into a regional here, and there's a lot of talent for the Golden Bears, especially offensively. And again, they're going to get Ian May back at some point, who will provide a real boost to the pitching staff. And then Utah as well, to their credit and to Coach Gary Henderson's credit, they're, like you said, they gave Oregon State all it could handle. They're playing well, and they've exceeded expectations in the early going. And at least for, in terms of the hierarchy of the Pac-12 after Oregon State, this is an important series, really important series for the Utes and the Golden Bears.
All right. So a couple other things to watch beyond the biggest conferences this weekend. You've got Sam Houston State against Dallas Baptist, open Conference USA play for the Patriots. You've got Missouri State at Indiana State. That could be an intriguing, like, there's a chance those are the two best teams in the Missouri Valley. And then Army Navy, always a good time when those rivals get together. This one is in Annapolis. So yeah, those are what I'm watching this weekend outside of the major conferences.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Alrighty, so a lot to look forward to this weekend. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. You can check out all the work over at baseballamerica.com. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Ratings, reviews, we love that all over at Apple Podcasts and Spotify particularly. And we'll be back here with another episode of the Baseball America College Podcast next week. So until then, enjoy the baseball. Don't watch too much basketball this weekend. Maybe second screen it. And we'll be back to talk through it all next week on the Baseball America College Podcast. We'll see you then.